Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Thanks for tuning in to the American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast, brought to you by Moda Fabrics. I'm Linda Augsburg, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine, and we're kicking off this special editor show with Beth Peterson, who's part of our marketing and promotions team here. Thanks for joining us, Beth.
Thanks for having me, Linda.
So as all of our listeners know, here at American Patchwork and Quilting, we're passionate about sharing our love of sewing with others. And one way we've found to do that is the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. And Beth, you're really integral in having this really come to life with us. And so if you could tell us a little bit more about the challenge and what it's all about.
Sure. We started in 2010 and we're in our sixth year this year. And so we wanted to encourage people all over the country to use their sewing skills for good and to use their skills in to make a difference in their community. So a handmade pillowcase can really make a difference in a person's life. It can bring comfort to sick kids, homeless families, people in need. And it just really shows people that somebody cares about them.
So why was it a pillowcase that kind of was the first idea?
Well, we had heard a story about foster children and how they didn't have anything to move their clothing or any other of their items to the next house. And so people put their items in a garbage bag. And we just thought that was the saddest thing. And we thought, what if they had a pretty pillowcase that they could call their own and they could put their items in that and move to their next house?
Well, and it's something small they can really carry with them, which is a great idea.
Yes.
So I'm guessing at some point then that, you know, we had to have a pattern, right?
Yes. We have a website and we have actually over 50 patterns now to choose from. We have the basic patterns like the roll it up pillowcase and pillow shams, and then all the way to very intricate and appliqued pillowcases. And they're a great way to practice new skills.
Right. Because I would think if there was something I wanted to learn, that small cuff of a pillowcase might be the great amount of work to put in on, say, learning how to make triangles or flying geese or something like that, where I don't want to invest in that whole quilt quite yet to practice my skills. But my skills are good enough that I know the cuff of the pillowcase can be something I can accomplish and something that'll still look great. Because we want to make sure those pillowcases look great that we donate.
Yes. And we do add new pillowcases every quarter. So we have 2 new pillowcases added each quarter, so 8 new patterns every year.
That's great. So, and with new fabrics, I'm guessing too, right?
Yes, and we also actually have a featured fabric slideshow that shows our 2 pillowcases made in a variety of different fabrics, so you can see a lot of different options.
Oh, that's wonderful. So tell me more about what I do with these pillowcases. So if I want to make pillowcases, like I can do this at home, do I have to be in a group or a club?
We encourage anyone to make a pillowcase. Every pillowcase makes a difference, whether it's 1 or 1,000. We love everyone to do it. So if you just want to do it at home, if you want to get some friends to do it, we've heard a lot of people have started just at home with a couple of friends, and then it just snowballed, and they are making tons of them now.
That's wonderful. So where would I donate them once I've made them?
We have a great list of charities on our website. And so many people think of children's charities first, but we know people of all ages really love and appreciate the pillowcases. So we've heard of people donating to hospitals, hospice, homeless shelters, youth and family shelters, nursing homes, places like Ronald McDonald House, United Way, and then veterans clinics. And our website has a really fabulous list of both general charities and specific ones. And that's allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases. And then just click on charity list. And there's a whole bunch of options for you there.
What else will I find on the website?
Well, you'll find our free patterns, and we also have a great education section, and that's geared towards teaching kids to sew, and so that's a really fun thing to do. You can teach kids to sew while giving back to the community. So we have a teaching tools download there that has some tips and tricks for sewing with children, and we also have 4 kid-friendly patterns, our basic roll it up and a drawstring bag, and those are written specifically for kids, so in kid language.
That helps a lot. I know that just makes it a little easier to follow along for them in class. It just, you know, we're not assuming term knowledge. We're not assuming any real sewing knowledge. So it's great that we have that available.
Yes.
Is there also some way to keep track there?
Yes, there's a counter on our website, and that keeps track of all the pillowcases that people have logged in. And we are over 625,000 pillowcases right now that have been recorded on our website. And you can always email us, too, if you have issues with the counter. Sometimes it's not working so well, so you can email us at millionpillowcases@meredith.com.
So that's millionpillowcases@meredith.com to email us. What I learned when I have logged the pillowcases that I've logged is you do have to be logged into the site first. And I don't know that people always think of that. But, you know, when I'm on, I sometimes I'm checking from my phone or from my iPad. And if I'm not logged into the site, it gives me a little bit of fuss. But as soon as I log in, everything works beautifully. And I have had times when I've spoken at guilds where I've had them count pillowcases that they've made to donate in their area, and I've had to go in and log in for them. So that's how I, you know, in addition to logging my own here and there, sometimes there's a really nice big bump when, you know, someone calls and says, "Hey, you know, there's our guild did this many pillowcases. Can you log them for us?" So it's really it's exciting to see those numbers jump.
Yes, we do get a lot of emails too with logging the numbers, and that's totally fine. We love doing that. It's fun for us to see that counter go up.
Yep. Now, do we also have a Facebook page for this?
We do. We have a group, and it is 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. You'll have to search for that and to find us, but we'd love for you to like our Facebook page.
And that site's also going to keep me posted on other things. When, for instance, if the Pillowcase Challenge shows up in the news, we post articles about that and that kind of thing as well, right?
Yes, and we also post when we have new patterns and Wonderful. Different events that we go to. So we have gone to a few different events this year. We went to the Sewing and Stitchery Expo in Puyallup, Washington. And then we also had a 4-H event in our area. So
yes. And it was so much fun. Both of those events were really so much fun to get to know different people and hear the stories of why they were there. It happened that while we were at the Sewing and Stitching Expo, I found out that a dear friend of mine was actually battling cancer. And so it kind of overwhelmed me at the time, and I was telling the story to one of our sewers. And just to hear their stories back of why they were there sewing pillowcases and where they were, you know, hoping the children's hospital that they were going to, if they'd had a child who'd been in that hospital, that kind of thing, just to hear those stories back was really heartwarming to me. And I know we've got some stories that you're able to share.
Yes. And a lot of them do start that same way. They had maybe a family member or a child that was in the hospital. And so they're just trying to pay back this kindness that they received while their child was ill. Actually, this is one such story about Valerie Schmidt, and she started Cases for Comfort. And that was a pay it forward kind of thing where her son was in the hospital fighting cancer. And to date, they have donated more than 3,000 pillowcases. So they sew themed pillowcases for holidays, birthdays, and in celebration of transplants, the end of treatment, and release days. And Valerie, the founder, says that her hope is that it helps them forget they are sick, if even for a moment, and lets them know that they are praying for them.
That's such a great story of really how somebody's experience receiving a pillowcase inspired them to turn it around, pay it forward to others who've been in a similar situation.
Yes.
That's such a great, I love hearing that that's where their sewing passion has gone.
Yes, and we also have a lovely woman who started her own pillowcase charity, and her name is Mary Albaugh, and she started sewing pillowcases and donating them after she had some traumatic life events. And after making 350 just on her own, she wanted to share that feeling. So she started her own pillowcase charity, and it's called Amazing Grace Pillowcase. And after 15 months, the group had donated 3,500 pillowcases.
Oh, my gosh.
And as Mary says, when women bond, amazing things happen.
It is so true. Not that we don't also welcome men to come and help us with pillowcases, but we do find that sometimes it's a force to be reckoned with you, when you team up some women to do good.
Yes. We love hearing these stories, too. It's about a Girl Scout troop. And to earn their bronze award, they learned to sew pillowcases for the challenge. And the troop leader, Kathleen, says the girls were thrilled to learn a new skill and help the community at the same time. And they donated 24 pillowcases. So even, you know, the smaller numbers, it doesn't matter. They all make a difference.
Everyone makes a difference. We've found, you know, you go through so many things. When we've had events, we've donated them locally. You hear stories of the places that they go. You know, once you start looking for those places that the pillowcases can go, it seems like there's an endless need, which, like you said, we didn't realize in the beginning. We thought, kids in foster care. But there are so many places that makes a difference. And
well, when you think about it, any place that somebody is going to sleep or stay even for a short amount of time can use a pillowcase.
Well, and it's a comfort to not have it be that sterile hospital environment looking white pillowcase. It's, you know, something fun and colorful, I think, when they come back to their room in a hospital or at a Ronald McDonald House or at a shelter, whatever that is. It's something that's cheery and it makes a difference.
Yes.
So, well, thank you so much, Beth, for telling us more about the challenge. Now, you're going to be back with us in a few minutes about talking a little bit more about an event that we've got coming up about the Million Pillowcase Challenge. So stay tuned. Meanwhile, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
So we're back from the break. Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'm joined with Beth Peterson, who's from our marketing and promotions team. And we're going to talk about this fun event we have coming up that we think you can all join in some fashion. So tell us more about the sew-a-thon, Beth.
Well, Linda, it's the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge 24-Hour Sew-a-thon. So we're going to be sewing for 24 hours straight in Des Moines, Iowa, here at Meredith Corporation. That's our headquarters. And it's September 18th and 19th. So it goes from 3 p.m. to 3 p.m. So all through the night, we'll be sewing pillowcases.
So we're starting on a Friday afternoon at 3 and sewing all the way till Saturday at 3.
Yes.
That's pretty exciting.
And this is our second annual. We did one last year, and we had so much fun, we thought we would do it again. So we'd love for you to come out and join us. The Des Moines event is free, and all materials are provided, and you can come sew with our staff,
yes.
And we'll all be here on hand to help you make a pillowcase.
And those pillowcases go to local charities when we're all done.
They do.
That's fabulous.
And you are welcome to join us for as little or as much of the event as you like. It's not a lock-in.
It's not.
Don't worry. You can just come for a couple hours. Or you can come for the whole time, you know, and be a trooper with
You've
us.
You've got that stamina?
Yes.
Now, we're going to take a little true mea culpa here. We did get to take one nap each a shift. So, I mean, there was like, you know, 24 hours straight for all 10 of us might have been a little frightening. So everybody got a nap. One nap.
Yes. A short nap.
A short nap.
Yeah. And we even had some real troopers join us at that crucial 2 to 3 a.m. kind of time when it was just We had three,
pretty quiet in town. Yeah.
Yes, we had three teenage girls come in, and they came in and sewed with us while we were going a little crazy from lack of sleep.
Thank goodness for youth. Thank goodness for youth. So other than the Des Moines event, because some people are going to say, Des Moines is a little far from my house. How else can they be involved in this event? Because I know it's not just our event going on at one.
That's right. We are encouraging people from all over the country to join along with us and sew. So if you can't make it to Des Moines, check out our website for a list of events happening around the country during the same time period. And that is allpeoplequilt.com/sewathon. And we encourage guilds, church groups, 4-H groups, you know, Girl Scouts, individuals, if you want to sit at home in your PJs, you know, please join us. We will have some fun things going on through social media, and we have an online social wall, and you can participate with us using our hashtag APQSewathon if you're posting photos from Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. And that way we can see what you're doing, you can see what we're doing, and we can all be in it together.
It's so much fun at that event to really see that interaction and see who's where doing what. And I don't know, each of us had, you know, family come in for the event and that kind of thing. But my mom was at home and she would email me and send me, okay, I'm going to bed, but I made five. So we kept updating the counter for my mom as well. So it's, you know, everybody just kind of playing along all through the country. And it was just so much fun to know that so many giving hearts were sewing at one time to make a difference in so many lives.
You can almost feel the love, can't you?
You really could. You really could. So if I'm a group or a shop or just an individual who's got some great sewing friends, what do I do next if I want to be involved in this?
Yeah, just go to our website. It's allpeoplequilt.com/sewathon and click sign up for our event. We just have a little form to fill out, and then that way you'll be kept up to date on all the information that we have for the event. So you'll get emails with, you know, information, posters, that kind of thing. So,
and if I want to do a private event, like if it's just me and five friends, but I still want to be part of the fun.
Yeah, there's actually just a little box you can check on our form that says this is a private event. You won't be listed on our website, but you'll still be part of the fun.
That's perfect. Because, you know, some people, it's not really inviting strangers into the living room that time of day.
Right, so, definitely.
Know, we want to make sure that's an option as well. But we do want to make sure we also know that everybody's, you know, welcome to be involved in whatever level they want to be.
Yes.
So,
and we will also have a national giveaway. So stay tuned for details on that. Last year, I think our prize was about $600. And
wonderful.
So that's anybody who's participating can enter to win that. So we want a lot of people to enter.
That's great. Are there any other deadlines or details I need to know about? You said the event's September 18th and 19th. I can sign up any time from now on.
Yes. The earlier, so, the better, because then you'll get all the information and you'll have a nice amount of time to plan. But, yep, just starting sign up now.
And if I'm looking for an event, I might want to check back when it gets closer to the dates to see what's in my area.
Yes.
Okay.
That'd be great. We do have some, you know, signed up already. But, yeah, we'll definitely have more towards
the closer to the event. I just didn't want to check now and think that's all. So
yes.
I know. I remember we had shops signing up last year. You know, the week
of. Oh, it was
maybe two days
yeah. before. So, yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about kind of how did it go last year?
Well,
tell our readers.
We had a great time, and we made 1,371 pillowcases at the Des Moines event. And then people reported into us from their events, and so we had a total of 7,785 pillowcases made in that 24-hour period, which we think is amazing.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. So, and that makes, again, so many different people. I know that when we were donating here locally, we got to meet some of the groups that received the pillowcases. And I almost think, as much as it was so wonderful to meet people who came to sew with us, it was equally rewarding to meet the people who ran the programs that were going to receive those pillowcases, because that's where the difference was really being made.
Yes, we spread smiles all over central Iowa. That's what we like to say. We donated to Youth Emergency Shelter and Services, Ronald McDonald House, Rebuilding Together, Homeless Shelter, Orchard Place, Hope Ministries, Child Serve, and Blank Children's Hospital, all here in central Iowa. So that was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was fun to go to the places and meet, like I said, meet the folks and know that the pillowcases were in good hands.
Yes.
But we also had a lot of fun meeting the people who came to sew with us. And that's another whole story. Since we had it here in our headquarters, which was really one of the first times we were able to open up the headquarters to the public in that way for an event, it was fun. The folks from, you know, different departments throughout our buildings here came and sewed pillowcases with us. I thought it was interesting that some of our coworkers from different magazines and different groups came, and some of them got a little competitive there with, you know, how many they might get done or who was a little faster. It was a lot of fun to see them get so excited. Groups that you wouldn't have thought of. We had, you know, the gentlemen and ladies from Wood Magazine and the staff from Successful Farming. So some of our publications that aren't really hobby-based or at least sewing-based came down and supported the challenge as well.
Oh, yeah. All the employees really loved it. And I know Family Fun Magazine also did something at a remote location.
Yes.
So it was a lot of fun to see that. And, of course, we had people coming from all over to come help us. So we had three generations in this family. It was the grandma, mom, and daughter, and they all came and sewed with us. And they sewed for a long time.
Well, and they drove about 6 hours to be here. It was really fun. They also had a little shop hop on the way down and maybe a little shop hop on the way back. So,
well, of course.
I mean, if you're going to drive, you've got to, you know, see some new places and do a little more quilt shopping. But they made a girls' weekend out of it and had a wonderful time. And they were so much fun and so enthusiastic.
Yes, and we had a couple 4-H groups come in, and the kids just had so much fun. And I think they were with us until maybe midnight or something.
I don't think they wanted to leave. They came in the later hours. They had had a member who'd battled cancer. And so she'd gotten pillowcases and she was a sewer. And so it was their way again of giving back to the people who'd made pillowcases that made her stay in the hospital, which was extensive, really made that special for her and brightened up her days. And so, you know, people come for their own stories. Some just come because they love to sew. We had one gal who came before she went to work. I think she started work at 8 a.m. on Saturday. She came in before that and sewed with us. And it was her birthday. And she'd said to her mom, "This is what I want to do on my birthday." And so they came in, sewed pillowcases. You know, those are the stories. You think they gave their time and their talents just to make somebody else's day a little brighter. And it's so easy to do. Those pillowcases don't take long. Here at our event, we have the kits pre-cut, so they're ready to go. Other events handle that differently, but everybody, you know, whenever you get your event figured out or talk to the folks who are running your event, you know, they'll tell you what you need to bring. Here at our event, they didn't need to bring anything. We had scissors, we had pins, we had all the pillowcase kits cut. So they could really
and
get
all the
started.
Sewing, we had all the sewing machines.
All the sewing machines set up and
just
ready to
everything.
Go.
Just everything. Just bring yourself. We even had snacks. We will also have snacks again.
Snacks make a difference. Keep us fueled and going through the night. There was music, there was laughing, there was dancing, there was singing, I think, at certain points, which perhaps we shouldn't talk about. But there was loud singing to keep
that
us
is
awake
not required.
At 2 in the morning. It's not required at all. I think there was even whistling while we worked. But it really was a fun atmosphere. We had some groups who would just sit and, like, pass it off to each other. You know, four people who might, okay, I'll do this part, and then I'll bring it to you, and then you do the next step. And that way people could kind of sit and stay in their places. We had some stations set up as well where they could just sit and stay at their station and make a, you know, rather than going through the process of each moving from machine to machine, they could sit right there and just pass them down a line. So we tried to think of everything to make it easy. But I think the event was just so much fun and so successful. I can't wait. We were so tired the day it ended, but even then, I think we all knew that we'd be doing it again this year.
Yeah. I mean, it's exhaustion, but also really inspiring.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Beth, for coming to tell us about both the Million Pillowcase Challenge and this special Sewathon event. I really appreciate you sharing all this information with our listeners, and we can't wait to see them, right?
Yes. And again, our website is allpeoplequilt.com/sewathon.
Terrific. Thank you so much. We'll be right back with Elizabeth Beasy, where we're going to talk a little bit about some questions that we've gotten on Facebook and how to solve sewers' problems.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once you've determined the block placement in a quilt, take a picture of the layout with your phone or digital camera. Look at the picture to make sure you still love the layout, as having a different perspective can sometimes make you see things you haven't before. Once your layout is final, refer to the image as you sew to ensure the blocks remain in their desired positions.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Glad to have you back after break. As you know, I am not Pat Sloan. I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting. And in this segment, I'm here with Elizabeth Beasy, who is the Senior Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting. And one of the things we wanted to cover today was just to answer some questions. Those questions you always wanted to know opinions on or thoughts on. And so we reached out to Pat Sloan's Facebook page and her Facebook group and asked them, what is it you really would love to know? So we got some great questions and we're hoping to give our opinions on them. But before we start, we have one little caveat.
Okay, so my caveat is that we are not the quilt police. So I do know that there are rules for a reason in quilting and sewing, and I fully agree with a lot of those rules. However, what we are going to do is we're not here to tell you what you're doing is wrong, first of all, but we're going to share some things that work for us, and I may have some different answers than Linda.
Absolutely.
And you're really just going to... I know some of you won't want to hear this, but you're going to have to try the different things that we tell you and see which thing works best for you. So
that's, and I've been one to admit that some of the things that we're going to address, I'm probably not the best at. I'm, you know, you'll hear me say some of those things. So, you know, take everything with, there's always that do as I'd say, not as I do situation. but again, we have been quilting for years. So we've tried a lot of different things. The first question somebody had was, how often do I really need to change my needle in my machine? Well, my answer is when it breaks is not your right answer. and more often than you think is probably a much better answer. But Elizabeth, how often do you really change your needle?
Okay, so first of all, I know a good rule of thumb is every 8 hours of sewing. But I also know a lot of people don't have a clue when they've stopped and started sewing. So when you're sewing like a small project or like a garment, I know, again, another rule of thumb is every time you start a new project, but you better be changing it more often than that if you're making a big quilt. So I change mine. I'd like to change my needle. It's kind of like changing your rotary blade. It just, everything, it's like, it's exciting. Something's, it just runs more like a well-oiled machine, if you will, and it just, it sews better. So a couple of things to look for when you have no idea when you last changed your needle. First of all, you could just change it, but if you are having skipped stitches, that is definitely a sign that it could be your needle. It could also be some yucky old thread that you're probably not supposed to be sewing with either. If you hear popping when you're sewing, that means it's kind of like trying to punch through. That's like super, probably way past the time
right.
when you should have.
Your point has probably come off your needle. You've probably hit a pin, which
yeah,
you know,
I just think
is a whole other thing.
Yeah, I think it's just amazing to me, and not preaching, but it's amazing to me how much money. That we all spend on fabric, and it's like, okay, I'm not even thinking about what I'm buying at the drop of a hat for fabric, but when it comes to a pack of needles, it's like, okay,
Just buy one.
Yeah.
Splurge. Just replace the needle.
Needles are not that much, and it's one of the cheapest things that you can do to improve your sewing.
Well, and I think especially what I've found is when I'm doing things like paper piecing, when I'm sewing on something that maybe isn't my cotton or garment fabric or whatever it is, when I'm sewing on something unusual, I certainly want to make sure that I'm changing that needle a little more often because that's not what the needle's built to sew through.
Yeah.
You know, it's not supposed to sew through paper, so you're probably adjusting the time left on it a little bit more.
Well, that said, even, okay, so realize that there is not just one type of needle out there, people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, investigate. I use machine quilting needles, actually, a lot, just quilting needles, because they're super sharp, and I don't know, I just feel like they sew better through lots of layers of when I'm doing patchwork piecing. But top stitch needles are also a good thing for, you know, if you are using a heavy thread or you're doing some home deck thing, mm-hmm. or a jeans needle. Just
jeans
there,
needles,
there are
leather
different
needles
out mm-hmm. there.
There are. And really, you'll also find, I think, a size that you like best. Though certain sizes are better for certain things, we all have our go-to sizes.
Yeah.
So,
which is the 75-11 sharps needle. That's totally my go-to needle.
Yep. So you'll buy those, you know, when you can, in a package of multiple, because you're going to use a lot of those.
Yeah.
So that's always just kind of a good gauge. Is eight more often than you think, and after about 8 hours of sewing is a good, safe, or when you start a new project that's, you know, a smaller project. I also like to keep a bottle of, like from a prescription, or even, I used to use film canisters, but, you know, who uses film anymore? but that's where I keep my broken needles. It's got a secure top, and that way I'm not running the risk of throwing that in my trash can and it mixing with my scraps, and oh, right, I go in there to, you know, pull out a scrap of fabric and I poke myself with a needle. So put those needles someplace safe.
And here's a silly aside to that as well. Sorry, this is more than you ever wanted to know about needles, people. Okay, so you also can, like, do yourself a favor. And in that little prescription pill bottle, put your bent pins. You hate using bent and dull pins. So just throw them away by putting them in that pill bottle. Seriously. It will just make you a happier quilter.
Yes, yes. There is no sense. Every time you stick that pin in that doesn't want to go, or the top pops off or whatever, just stop. All right, so... But now that we have totally covered how often to change your needle, another question we got is, does ironing seams open weaken the quilt top? So this is one of those, like true, there is a split out there. Several of the questions we got, there is a split out there, a divide, a continental divide on yeses and nos. And then there's some people in the middle, but...
But most people are emphatically yes or no. So, but we'll kind of talk about the different schools of thought. So, I'd say the traditional view is, yes, it does weaken the fabric if you press your seams open, or weaken the seams if you press your seams open, because there's not, the only thing holding it together right there is the thread, you know, so, and it's not always there. It's only when the stitches come together that those little stitches are there. However, I use the world's smallest stitch length, so...
So you don't have big gaps between
your
stitches.
No, I don't have big gaps between it either. The only reason I don't press seams open is because I feel like it's a pain. And again, I'm all about irritation-free sewing. So yes. I don't mind how it looks when I press it to one side. And I am careful to press seams, in different directions. So things abut when I put them together.
That's what I like about pressing seams to one side, is that when I'm then sewing over that intersection, if I've done it right, I can make those seams abut so those points match as well as they can. But I know in the past we've had projects in the magazine that have specifically called for those seams to be pressed open, whether it's because of the quantity of seams that are going to meet in one place or just really the designer's preference for how the quilt top will lay in the end.
Because like you said, when you're having seams, like you're planning that they have to abut. Okay, so that's one reason to press them open. You don't have to plan for those things. I know several people who just love that crisp, clean, totally flat look of quilts that are pressed, or seams that are pressed open, and they strongly believe in that. And, they'll say that, yes, I have pressed them open for years. I've washed these quilts, and our quilts are Actually, Weeks Ringel and Bill Kerr of Modern Quilt Studio come to mind because they say that they've pressed all of their seams open forever and ever. They machine quilt all of their quilts pretty tightly together, and they throw them in the wash and they dry them, and they've never had any problems. And a lot of it, I'm sure, is because they machine quilt them closely together.
Right.
And so there's nothing that's going to happen to that
seam. There's not a lot of tension on that seam to pull it one way or the other. And I think that really is, like you said, part of the science of it, if you will. So ironing seams, again, one of those things that's personal preference. Try what you think works best. If you run into a pattern that tells you to do it, give it a shot. See if it works for you. You might find that you love it.
And there are some tools out there that help you press them open more easily and not burn your fingers while you do it. So there are a couple things that fit on your finger and that help if they're metal and they help you press it open, or there's a stiletto and there's some stuff that makes it easier.
Yes, it used to be easier in clothing when it was a 5/8-inch seam, but when you're quilting and it's a 1/4-inch, you've got a little less fabric to hold on to. So since we've talked about ironing your seams and how we wash our quilts at the end as far as, you know, that's when that time is where I think people worry about that, that opens up kind of another question, which is to pre-wash or not to pre-wash. Now, I grew up sewing for 4-H and, of course, sewing garments because at the time quilting wasn't so popular. My garment sewing friends would be horrified to hear me tell you, but I don't pre-wash almost any fabric. There are a few times I do, but most everything that I quilt with has not been washed.
And again, this is something that people feel strongly about. So, you know, you may be horrified to see, you know, that both Linda and I very rarely pre-wash. There are a lot of people that believe strongly in it, and that's great. You know, good for you. So pretty much those people won't have problems. For those of us who almost never pre-wash, here's the times when you probably should pre-wash. So if you're using flannel, I always find, and again, there's differences in qualities of flannel, but every flannel, I just assume that it's going to shrink a bunch and I pre-wash it no matter what.
Right.
Another reason why we don't pre-wash, or why I don't pre-wash, is that I love that puckered look, the puckered antique look of after I wash and dry my quilt, because I do wash and dry my quilt. Again, a question that people feel strongly about. Anyway, so I want all of my fabrics to shrink at about the same rate when I wash them. Another time I do pre-wash is when I'm making memory quilts, because most of the fabrics in that have already been washed. Their garments, their you know, clothing, their someone's old baby blanket. And if I'm going to combine cotton with that, I definitely pre-wash that, because I don't want some silly puffy cotton areas with like a t-shirt quilt, you know, with
the
rest of it.
So you're pre-washing the cotton.
I am.
Worrying less about pre-washing the clothing.
Yeah, because hopefully that's all been washed. So.
Right. So the cotton is what's going to give you the, or the flannel or whatever it is you're tying in with it is going to give you the shrinkage, because the other things have been washed and already shrunk.
Yep.
All right. The other time I do it is kind of, you know, every once in a while if I've got a red that I think, and what I've known to do is just kind of run a piece of white fabric over a color if I'm really concerned about the fabric. If I rub a piece of white fabric over it with my thumb, just kind of put some pressure on it. If a lot of color comes off on that piece of white fabric, then I know that that might be something I want to pre-wash. Reds have come a long way. The dyeing process has come a long way, but I know a lot of people are always still paranoid about red. So I will sometimes pre-wash that. But, you know, with things like pre-cuts, it's so hard to pre-wash them and not lose part of the fabric that that's part of the reason people don't wash it as much. But if you do want to pre-wash, some people will do things like, once they've pre-washed that yardage, they'll clip a corner so they know that one's been pre-washed. So that when they go to grab fabric out of their stash, they know in a second whether it's been pre-washed or not. Or some people don't. They bring it in the house, it gets pre-washed. So, all right, well, we're going to take a little break. We'll be back in a few minutes with some more questions and answers.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, Rotary cuts several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again. repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
So we're back from our break. I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor at American Patchwork and Quilting, and Elizabeth Beasy is here with me, who's the Senior Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and we have more questions to answer. And I think the one that I always kind of laugh at, and yet it's really a good question, but it always makes me giggle. Do I really need an accurate 1/4 inch seam? Well, yes, if you want your quilt to work out. Now, if you want to do your own math, then you don't need a 1/4 inch seam. But the math of almost every quilt pattern I've ever seen is done with 1/4 inch seam allowances. And depending on how much quilting or piecing gets done to that quilt, you can really see a significant difference in block size if your 1/4 inch seam is not super accurate. So, Elizabeth, what tips do you have to keep a good 1/4 inch seam?
Well, actually, I just want to back up a little bit and talk about that, yes, most of the time you really totally need a 1/4 inch seam. If you're going to sew together like a one-patch quilt and you're just going to be consistent, I don't care what that seam is. Like if I'm sewing a whole bunch of 10-inch squares together,
doesn't matter.
It would not matter at all. But where you're going to really get in trouble is when you've got quilts like a block next to a block that has a bunch of seams in it next to a block that is a setting square.
Right.
Or
right.
Next to a block that's just a four patch, you know, because then as far as you're off that much, you know, because we figured it out based on the real math. So if you're not, you know,
if you're a 16th of an inch off and you've got
10 seams,
you've got, you know, a big difference, a 5/8 inch difference on that. You're not going to match up to
exactly,
that block next
yeah.
to it.
So sometimes people wonder, they say, well, are your instructions wrong? It's like, no, that setting square is the right size based on
the mathematics
that would be. So, I mean, again, testing your 1/4 inch seams. People assume it is wherever the 1/4 inch line on their sewing machine is.
Or even their 1/4 inch foot.
Yeah, but that's oftentimes you work with, it's supposed to be, you know, with a particular stitch on your machine. Sometimes mm-hmm. there's, you know, the 1/4 inch stitch and...
Or a needle setting or
yeah.
a place. Plus, I mean, we've all said... I used to always put my graph paper under there that was 4 squares to an inch, and I figured if my needle was in on the line and the next line was the edge of my foot, that was where my machine was, you know, supposed to be set up. But the difference is, you know, the truth is there's still that point where it rolls over, you know,
yeah,
when you turn the fabric back.
Yeah, which we call the turn of cloth, yeah.
The thread.
Yeah.
All those things take up some of that space.
Seam allowance. So, yeah, so if you're measuring the... you know, the 1/4 inch, it needs to be right from the edge of the fabric to the far left side of your thread, and maybe even a titch more because of that turn of the cloth of the
right.
fabric. There's just a little bit. So a scant 1/4 inch is going to be your best friend. And again, whether you're measuring it, you know, on your sewing machine or not, the best way is to just test it out. And so a lot of people say, sew 3 1.5 inch strips together with your what you think is your scant 1/4 inch, you press it open really well. Don't actually, you know, don't have a little bit of fold in there when you press it.
Right, nice and smooth.
And then measure your finished center strip. If he's 1 inch, yay, good job. That's the setting you always want to remember. If it's not, keep adjusting it until it is. So, sorry, there's trial and error, especially based on your machine. But, what I also love to use is an edge stitching foot? Sorry, I'm having a mind blank. It's the one with the little guide along the edge.
Yep.
I love that. I use it all the time. And then you don't really have to pay attention to it. Once it's totally on the right setting, it's like it's just going to ride along with it. And
Just make sure, again, you know, how far pressed up into that edge are you or how far away from it. It's one of those things that really, once you get going and you find your quarter inch, make notes, you know, on this foot, I use this needle setting, and then you'll have that to refer back to so you don't have to rely on your memory. Because, you know, if it's been a while since you've sewn on that machine and every machine is different, you really want to have that reference point. So just leave a post-it note somewhere and you tape it to the end of your machine, and it's a great way to keep track.
Well, and for that matter, I mean, I know this is important, but it's like, okay, if you get done and your blocks are all a different size, it's not going to be the end of the world if you trim them all down to the correct size.
Right.
You may lose some points at the end of a block. It's going to be fine.
Yes.
So as long as just you get those blocks to be consistent, your quilt will turn out fine. And that kind of leads into the next question that we have is a lot of people wonder why the border on their quilt is not flat. It can ripple. And
also people have said, well, and why is my quilt top shorter or bigger than the pattern and my borders don't fit? Like where are those problems coming from? And a lot of those problems are coming from their seam allowance. Probably not their cutting, though that can also weigh into it. If you're not an accurate cutter, again, if you're not an accurate cutter and you're not an accurate sewer, then you're compounding the problem as you put the quilt together. So you want to make sure you're super accurate on those steps if you really are that particular about everything being perfect on your quilt top.
Yeah. But the thing about the border, when you add borders, the measurements that we're going to give you in the patterns in the pages of our magazines are the mathematically correct border. Most people probably end up with a slightly smaller quilt top than what we say it should be. That's just because, you know, again, all the seams, they just don't end up quite as big. So before you put on any border, you really should measure through the center of your quilt. And that's the measurement that you should cut your border strips. And you put them on either side of your quilt and I do a lot of pinning if I know that my quilt is wonky. You just kind of ease it all in. You can ease in a lot. Actually. It's better to do that than to have this stretchy-looking quilt at the outside.
Yes.
Because after it's quilted, it's not going to.
It's easier to, if you have to ease on the borders, it is easier to quilt that quilt than it is to quilt out the ripples in a border. Any long-arm quilter or quilter that you take your quilts to will tell you it is easier to work with the first problem than the second problem.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, we do have a video online. It's a Machine Minutes video called Adding Borders. And we talk just about that same thing because that's really one of the problems. I always cut my borders by the width that they're going to be, but I never final trim that length until I've got my quilt top together. It's just because I've learned through trial and error. I've had the ripply borders. My first quilts had ripply borders because I didn't know better. And so, you know, one of those things. And that's also why sometimes people's quilt tops just aren't quite the size they thought they were going to be. Again, if your seam allowances aren't accurate, and if your seam allowance aren't accurate at the beginning and the end, sometimes people, when they first sew on to the seam or come at the end of the seam, they do a little bit of veering, so things aren't square. So again, you just want to be really consistent in those seams.
And a way just to prevent that, I think, is using what we call leaders and enders. So if you sew on a little tiny scrap of fabric and you're just chain piecing, just sew onto the next piece, your seam is much more likely going to be straight if you sew on and off onto another little piece of throwaway fabric.
So. Yes, less likely to veer. Another question we had was about hand quilting. So when hand quilting or hand piecing with paper piecing, I should say, do you sew or glue?
So like in English paper piecing,
yes.
I'm assuming is that.
I think that's it.
So again, it's a preference thing. I like to do things really fast. So I actually glue stuff down with like a sew line glue stick, and you just glue it to the back of the paper pieces. Other people, I think almost nobody now actually bastes through the paper. You can do that. My mom used to do that 40 years ago, actually. So, however, if you're stitching, if you're using thread to baste that pieces together, now people are really just, they're not sewing through the paper, they're sewing through the seam allowances only, like where you turn over two adjacent edges on a piece, mm-hmm. and then they'll just sew through a little bit through that seam allowance.
Like a little tacking stitch.
Yeah, a little tacking, and then you just do that all around the piece, and then after you sew them together, you just pop out that piece of paper. So, yeah.
I was working on a quilt where one edge of a curve had to be hand applicated, and that's what I was doing, is I'd fuse my freezer paper shape down, and then I just do a little baste along there and pull it up just enough that it conformed to that curve and press the daylights out of it. Mm-hmm. Also, another small pieces thing is, what's the best way to organize fabric for a scrappy quilt? Because you are really the scrappy quilter, Elizabeth, much more so than I am. I've read a lot of tips about it, but you really have the magic going on.
Nice. Yeah, I have the magic going on. I love scrappy quilts, but I also do a lot with color. So most of my fabric still is sorted by color. However, if I get to those really small pieces, sometimes I sort them by lights, medium, and darks and ignore the color altogether, because that's just, I can grab those while I'm doing a super scrappy quilt and, actually, I cut a lot of 2.5-inch squares from, or 2.5-inch wide strips from, just extra pieces of fabric, so I don't have to put those, fold them up and put them back into the color bin. So again, those are just sorted by light, medium, and dark and put away so that you can just grab them and it'll make a nice sparkly quilt with colors that you may not have ever intended to put together. So,
well, that's one of the things I've heard a lot of people do, is that once they've cut their quilt and their quilt is finished, so that they know they don't have any more pieces to cut, like because something went wrong, they'll cut those scraps up if they're just small pieces, an eighth of a yard, a quarter of a yard even, and cut them into 2.5-inch strips or 3.5-inch, whatever. If they've got a go-to pattern that they like to just kind of crank out when they need a quick quilt, they'll just cut those strips, throw them in bins or organizers or drawers, and that way they've got, when they're ready to make one of those, because they've got to really make something either to donate or to give as a gift or whatever it is their reason, they can just pull that drawer, and maybe it's a lights drawer and a darks drawer, and they can go. I took a log cabin class, and that's what she did with her scraps, and it was the dimension for those blocks, and she just always had those scraps on hand. And it really worked well for her.
Well, and I love log cabin quilts, but I also love wonky log cabin quilts, and I love string piecing. So I don't even usually pay attention to what the size of the width of the strip is. I mean, all my kind of extra jelly roll strips, yes, are in, so a bunch of them are 2.5-inch wide, but in my big old strips bin, there are, they're 2-inch wide, there's 1-inch wide, they're just a variety of strip sizes, and I can tell at a glance, I would say, okay, is this a 2.5-inch wide strip? So if I'm using a pattern that calls for that, but otherwise, they're right there and they're ready to string piece or make log cabins or wonky log cabins.
Well, and that's also, whenever you do that miscut, because we all, when we're cutting a quilt, invariably will cut something and, it was supposed to be 2 inches and I actually cut it 1 3/4 or, whatever. It's never lost fabric. It just needs to go into the right bin.
There you go. It wasn't a mistake.
Always a place.
It was just adding it to my...
And that's why we also put a little extra buffer in all the pattern yardages. We don't ever want you to be cutting a project that you don't have enough fabric for. So there's always a little extra wiggle room in there. And those extra pieces can always go into a project to coordinate.
Yeah, so if you are a perfect cutter, you can...
There's always going to be some scraps left
over. A little teeny tiny bit left over.
Well, and those extra strips where you cut, 2 or 3 squares from it, but you cut the whole strip, those pieces can go in there too. So, all right. Well, thank you so much for sharing these great ideas with us and, really answering some of those questions from Pat Sloan's Facebook group. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. Pat will be back next week. And for our U.S. listeners, I hope you enjoy your 4th of July weekend. Thanks for listening to the American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.